that's going to determine what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And we're going to be talking about one of those carefully kept secrets in America, and that is the source of our freedom and how that source is being eroded by people who hate our Constitution, who hate individual freedom, who want to expand the power of government over our lives, and of course eventually enslave not only our people, but the peoples of the entire world, for there truly is a organized, coordinated conspiracy against God. And the objective is a new world order and a new world religion. And when you understand that, then so much of what's going on today really begins to make sense. David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, Dr. Stan, it's a blessing, and may God bless you as you share the truth with Americans and to seek to restore our constitutional republic by educating millions of people across the country. And it's an honor to be on your show, and I know that your listeners are very concerned about what's taking place, and rightly so, because what's happening in our land is nothing less than those who are breaking the law, taking power that is not granted to them at the federal level as well as to a lesser extent at state level. And the people of America are unaware. They're maybe aware that something's wrong. I talk to people all the time that have a sense that, you know, something's amiss, but they can't quite put their finger on it. They don't know what's really wrong with America. And it's very simple. If we go back to our founders, we discover in the founding documents of our country the wisdom they had based upon God's law, derived from God's word, as they crafted the founding documents, a declaration stating the purpose for which government is instituted to secure our God-given rights, and then Constitution explaining in detail how those are going to be implemented, and the Bill of Rights securing our God-given rights against a tyrannical government.
All right, fine. Well, certainly I think that you know, we've been going through the Constitution. You sort of pick up the story there.
Well, we've been looking at Article 2. Let me just remind folks that it's easy to remember the first three articles, the subject of the first three articles. Article 1 deals with the legislative branch, Congress and the Senate. Article 2 with the executive branch, Article 3 with the judiciary, and of course the design of our founders, knowing that all men are fallen, that is, all men are sinners and have fallen short of the glory of God, as Romans clearly states. Therefore, no man, even a person who's a Christian, even a person who's being redeemed and sanctified, is not to be trusted with unlimited power. You never want to give an individual power that there is not a check against that power by another branch of government, is the design of our founders in the Constitution. So as we're looking at Article 2, we're examining the powers that are granted to the executive. And we need to remember the structure of our founders was the powers granted are only those expressly stated in the Constitution. That is, if the Constitution does not give the federal government a certain power, it does not have that power. Only those powers expressly stated are given to the executive branch. And we've talked a little bit about the terms in the selection. We've talked about the Electoral College, which is much ballyhooed in our day and criticized, but wrongly so. Our founders did not trust mobocracy. And we talked about the fact that a president's qualifications must be natural-born citizen, 35 years old, resident of the U.S. for 14 years. We talked about the process of secession. If the president dies or is incapacitated in office, who steps in his place? And so that's all in Article 2, Section 1. And we spoke about the powers and duties of the president, which is in Section 2 of Article 2, as commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy, and his function as administering the departments under his executive branch, and his power to pardon offenses, and his power to make treaties with the concurrence of two-thirds of the senators, and his power to appoint Supreme Court justices as well as ambassadors and appoint other major federal officers. And then we talked a bit about his powers and ceremonial duties to give a State of the Union address, helping set the tone for the nation.
That's approximately a third of the veterans of the First Gulf War.
and recommending legislation. Again, the president cannot tell Congress what it wants to be done, what he wants to be done. He may recommend ideas, and often that's done through the State of the Union address, and he receives foreign ambassadors faithfully executing all the laws of the United States. Let's pause there for a moment, because we need to remember that the supreme law of the land is the United States Constitution. Article 6 very clearly states that. When we get to that, we'll highlight that again. But it's the supreme law, which means any law made by Congress, signed by the President, approved by the court system, any law that violates the original intent of the Constitution is null and void. It's not that it's bad law. It's no law at all if it violates the original intent of the Constitution. So when we say the President is to faithfully execute all laws of the United States, it means only laws which are in complete harmony with the original intent of the Constitution, which is why, you know, our outreach here to America at Institute on the Constitution is so important. We want people to understand what the founders meant by each word and each phrase of the Constitution. The original intent is so important to understand, because that is the guiding and fixed standard of what is lawful in the United States and what is unlawful. And as you study this standard, and talked a bit about Congress already, we've talked about some of the president's actions that are unlawful. That is, when the president acts as one who's declaring war, even though he doesn't call it declaring war, but every war since World War II is an unconstitutional war, and that Congress has not declared war as it's charged with doing in the Constitution. Instead, the president has kind of called up the troops and acted as commander-in-chief illegally. That is, he cannot be commander-in-chief of the armed forces until the Congress, declaring war, calls up the state militias and federalizes those state militias to defend us from an invasion or an internal insurrection or some direct threat to us.
Hold that thought right there, David. We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here with Radio Liberty. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney. We're talking already about our Constitution and the fact that so much of what goes on today is in violation of the Constitution. And this is true because many of our politicians have never read the Constitution. They don't understand the whole philosophy of our way of life, which was to limit the power of the central government so men could be free. Limited government and liberty were to be synonymous. Total government and tyranny were to be synonymous. Our founding fathers said, you know, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the change of the Constitution. But you see, the fascist element has been working for half a century to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. That was one of the purposes of the Vietnam War. While our boys were going overseas to fight and die in Vietnam, they were centralizing power in Washington, D.C., and who could speak against that when our boys were dying overseas? And today, as boys continue dying in Iraq, fighting for freedom, we're losing our freedom here at home. And that's why the message that the Institute of the Constitution has is so vitally important. You have to understand the Constitution and take the chains off of the people and put them back on the government. So pick this story up there, David.
Well, as you're saying, if we just look at that one violation of what the War Powers Act, which is really an unconstitutional act that Congress granted certain powers to the president, those things, for the president to follow through and use an unconstitutional piece of legislation is to violate his oath of office, which is to faithfully execute all the laws of the United States and to uphold and defend the Constitution. As you said, he really isn't defending the Constitution. He's defending the New World Order, the grab for power and centralization of power in Washington, D.C. And so what we have taking place here is a violation of the executive branch against the basic structure our founders gave us in the Constitution. And that violation, as you mentioned, is egregious. And it goes far beyond just conducting an unconstitutional war. It goes with violating the citizens' rights, with things like the Patriot Act, there's a whole long list of things of Feingold campaign finance reform. He even said he knew as he signed that campaign finance reform bill, he knew that it was unconstitutional.
You're speaking now of President Bush, and that's right. He said, I knew it was unconstitutional, but I figured that the Supreme Court had declared unconstitutional, knowing full well that the Supreme Court was packed at that time with people who don't believe in the Constitution, and the entire purpose of this so-called campaign contribution had nothing to do with limiting, campaign contributions. It was always to silence the truth so that no one would be allowed to tell the public how the congressman had voted for 6 months, for six weeks ahead of the election, right, the only time people are really concerned about it. And so if you were a public service group or trying to get the information out, they could come after you, violation of the federal law, if you told the American people how your congressman had voted. What insanity is that, and why would President Bush sign it? Oh, he said, I knew it was unconstitutional, but I signed it anyway. That alone is reason he should be impeached.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the next point in Section 4 of Article 2. What do you do when the president breaks the law? What do you do when he violates his oath of office? What do you do when he is actively destroying and distorting the Constitution? Impeachment is the answer to all of those questions. And it applies not only to the president, but of course the vice president, and actually all federal officers could be impeached. And there's three grounds on which someone can be impeached: treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, when you talk about impeachment, what comes to most people's mind is the most recent example in Clinton. And, of course, we never heard about treason or bribery. Instead, we heard all high crimes and misdemeanors referring to his sex scandal. Well, actually, the sex scandal, as significant as that was, pales by comparison to the kind of treason, and you could actually call it bribery, that he engaged in.
In fact, he transferred some of the most sensitive of America's military secrets, how to target our saddle up on our missiles. So he transferred that to the Chinese communists. Now, the excuse it's given, well, he got a couple of $100,000 campaign contributions for releasing some of our most secret of all secrets, most dangerous things, so that now the Chinese communists can target our cities and endanger and threaten the lives of every American citizen. Well, I don't really believe he did that just for money. I believe there was another agenda. But whatever you believe, this was an act of treason. And, of course, where is the outcry and what's going to be done about it? Why, Bill Clinton got off with just a slap in the wrist, and old Ken Starr, who is supposedly going to do the investigation, spent all of his time talking about Monica Lewinsky and not anything about the real serious crimes. And the 50 people whose lives were lost, who spoken out against Bill Clinton and were gunned down or died in prison, like the one gentleman who was going to testify against him. And instead of taking him out and giving him protection, they left him in prison where he died under very mysterious circumstances.
So the president's impeachment, Clinton's impeachment, should have been far more for treason and bribery than the Lewinsky scandal. But I think accurately stated by some that the Lewinsky scandal was useful to keep America's attention focused on the wrong thing. It's like when a magician is doing a sleight of hand act. What he wants to do is get your attention focused away from where the really important action is taking place, so that you'll be distracted and you'll think something's happening over here, and you'll miss the most important thing taking place. And indeed, the most important thing taking place not only in the Clinton regime, but also in the Bush regime, both Bush 2 and Bush 1, is that our national sovereignty is being attacked and undermined. In order to build a new world order, our constitutional structure is being sacrificed. Everything that is going on from day one of the Bush White House, the actions are destroying our constitutional republic, so those actions are treasonous by any definition.
But of course, it's not just Bush administration, not simply the second Bush administration. Both of our political parties are controlled, in essence, by exactly the same people. And, of course, they give you the idea, you go to the polls, you vote for the candidate of your choice. No, you go to the polls, you vote for the candidate of their choice.
Hmm.
And until people understand that, until we have honest, free elections where people can really have some competition instead of the same people selecting the candidates on the Republican and the Democrat Party ticket, and then you go to the polls and you vote for their candidate, nothing is going to change.
Yes. Well, impeachment is for those three grounds: treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. So there's a broad range of things that can be brought against the president or vice president or any federal officer, actually, to impeach them. The procedure for impeachment, if you recall what took place in the Clinton example, is the House is the one that writes up articles of impeachment. That is a list of charges against the president or the other official. And those lists are presented to the entire House, and a majority is required for the House to vote for impeachment. Many people don't understand that impeachment takes place when the House successfully votes, with the majority of the House voting for impeachment. The president was impeached. Clinton was impeached. Now, he was not removed from office, because stage two in this is the action of the Senate. The Senate then basically holds a trial to look at the charges that the House has brought to them, and the Senate is supposed to examine all of those charges in detail and determine if, indeed, the president or the other federal official is guilty of having committed these charges against them, and then vote to remove them from office. And a supermajority, two-thirds, is required to remove him from office, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presides over that, you could call it a trial. In a sense, what happens here in the procedure is very similar to what happens in our court process. If you're charged with a capital crime, such as, say, murder, the first thing that has to happen before you are brought to trial is a grand jury is impaneled, and the grand jury looks at the evidence the government is bringing against you to determine if the government has enough evidence to actually have a honest trial. In other words, is this evidence trumped up, or is it factual? Can it be determined? That's what a grand jury is supposed to do, investigate the evidence the government's presenting to determine if a trial should take place. If the grand jury votes to yes, send it to trial, then it's called an indictment that is handed down from the grand jury, and then an actual trial takes place, and the jury in that trial then determines, looking at the evidence, if the person truly is guilty or not guilty, based on what testimony and evidence they look at in the court. So in a similar pattern, the House here, kind of functioning like a grand jury, draws the evidence up, charges of impeachment, articles of impeachment, and votes whether to send that trial then to the Senate, where the Senate actually conducts a detailed investigation of the charges to determine if, indeed, the individual, in this case President Clinton, is guilty or not. And as you well mentioned in another show, what took place is an absolute joke. You remind me that Trent Lott, what did he say? He gave 3 days?
Well, basically what had happened is also told in a book called Sellout by David Shippers, who was the counsel for the House Impeachment Committee. Actually, it was a predominantly Republican committee, and David Shippers was a Chicago lawyer. But he was an honest man, and everybody respected him, both Democrats and Republicans. So they went to see Trent Lott. He was there, and the 10 members of the House who'd risked their reputations to get the impeachment through, and they said that we think it's going to take 3 months. And, of course, we've got, you know, hundreds of witnesses here against the president. And Trent Lott said, I'm going to give you 3 days. You got three witnesses, and we're not going to impeach the president. But what nobody ever wanted to mention, of course, that Trent Lott's a 33rd degree Mason. All the Republicans who were Masons switched over to the Democratic side to support Bill Clinton, because, of course, he was a high-ranking demolay. Of course they weren't going to impeach him, and that sworn secret oaths never to take action against a fellow Mason. And although Bill Clinton was not a Mason, he was a demolay, which, of course, is a kindred spirit. So you have to understand, when you have secret societies in society, you're not going to get justice. And we don't have justice, of course. Why society begins to implode, and this is really what's happening. But nobody is going to tell you that. Certainly not Dr. Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. Well, David, to pick up the story there.
So that was an example where the Senate really failed to do its constitutional duty to do a true investigation of the charges, and to have freedom, basically, to call in whatever witnesses they needed to get the information to determine if, indeed, these charges were valid and whether he should be impeached or not. And so, actually, when the vote came, Article 1 of impeachment, 45 to 55, and Article 2 was 50 to 50. So He was not removed from office. Nonetheless, he was impeached. Two previous impeachment processes have taken place in the history of our country of a president. Back in 1868, during the era of Reconstruction, you had a competition really going on as to how Reconstruction would be handled. And President Andrew Johnson was wanting to be much more moderate and less harsh towards the South during that time. And the radical Republicans in control of Congress were just violently opposed to his position and wanted to crush the South, basically. And so they voted to impeach him. And actually, the impeachment did pass through the House, but the Senate, when it came to the Senate floor, it fell short one vote of actually removing him from office, which in that day was 35-19. And then, more in our modern era, 1974, you'll recall Richard Nixon resigned as articles of impeachment were being prepared in the House against him. So he was not actually impeached. They were beginning to prepare to impeach him, and that was enough of a threat that he resigned rather than go through the ordeal of impeachment and then the ordeal of a trial in Senate. It's an interesting contrast between Nixon and Clinton. Evidently, Clinton knew that his allies would stand up for him, and he didn't have anything to fear about being removed from office, and he was absolutely right. He knew that they would not remove him, and it would just be a show trial that distracted Americans from what really was taking place during his administration. And then historically, impeachment against other federal officers has taken place 11 other times. 9 judges were impeached at various times. 1 senator was impeached and 1 cabinet official. It's interesting, the Senate actually acquitted all but 4 of those impeachments. They, you know, had a trial and said, no, they're not guilty. So of the 11, the actual removal from office has only taken place for 7 of those impeached in the history of our country. The senator, by the way, who was impeached, was acquitted because the Senate claimed that Congress lacked the jurisdiction to impeach a senator, that the proper remedy for Congress in that case would have been to expel the senator, not to impeach him. So, you know, a little debate there, and there is a rule for expulsion in Article 1, Section 5 of the Constitution. But the point here is really interesting. The impeachment process and the impeachment guarantee in our Constitution was to protect us from law-breaking presidents and other government officials, and it has very, very little, has done that extremely weakly at all, if at all. So, you know, you see 7 people removed from office in the course of 200 and some odd years is extremely concerning, because it means our elected officials don't really believe in impeachment. And this has a long history. It goes all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, who called impeachment, that was, speaking of federal judges, he said federal judges are perhaps the most dangerous officials in the federal government, because there's no elective control over them to hold them accountable to their oath of office. And he went on to say...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Pastor Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Pastor Whitney was simply saying that we've only impeached a very, very few people, a few, a few federal judges, 1 senator who was up for impeachment, but he was not thrown out of the Senate. But anyway, of course, Pastor Whitney was talking about Thomas Jefferson, who said, you know, really one of the most dangerous people in our society are the federal judges. And he said, you know, I fear for my country that these people will begin taking all power to Washington, D.C., you know, and of course, they're violating their oaths. And impeachment is not necessarily a scarecrow. In other words, these people are not going to be frightened to go ahead and violate the law. The judges won't be, because they're not afraid of being impeached, although they certainly should be. And I think an awful lot of people on our Supreme Court at the present time who are going to foreign nations to get ideas on why we shouldn't have capital punishment, or why we should certainly be able to have legalized sodomy and all of these things. This has nothing to do with other countries. It has nothing to do with the United Nations. It has to do with the Constitution these judges have sworn to uphold, and they don't believe in it. They are Olympians. They are people who believe that they have the right, the duty, the responsibility to govern us people, irrespective of what the Constitution says. It is an elitist concept, I think everybody should be concerned when we have judges who have sworn to uphold the Constitution and don't even believe in it.
And we need to put people in office who do believe in the Constitution, particularly this power of impeachment that has been used so infrequently. It indicates, as Jefferson said, it's not going to scare anybody. It's an empty, full of stuffed straw and has little of any power. But it could have power if there were people in office who truly believe when somebody violates their oath of office, when somebody breaks the supreme law of the land, they must be held accountable and they must be impeached. But the truth of the matter is, we won't get people into office who believe that unless we, the American people, understand the importance of impeachment and understand it as originally intended by the statements of our founding fathers. If we understand it, then we will require those who we send as our elected representatives to impeach those who violate their oath of office. And this is true not only on the federal level, but an example comes to mind here on the state level. My good friend Delegate Don Dwyer called for the impeachment of the judge here in the state of Maryland who has basically overturned Maryland's marriage law that says marriage is only between a man and a woman. That's from the founding of this state, even before this state joined in the Declaration of Independence and established its own constitution, all the way back to the very first settlers. This state has always made it law that marriage is between a man and a woman. Well, this judge, a wicked judge in Baltimore, said, no, it's not. Marriage is between any two men, any two women, whatever. It doesn't matter. Marriage is between whoever wants to get married that's an adult. And this judge had violated her oath to uphold the Constitution of the state of Maryland, and my good friend, Delegate Don Dwyer, called for her impeachment, that she be impeached, because that's the remedy when you have a judge who breaks the law or when you have a president who breaks the law. Well, it was astonishing to see the response to his call for impeachment. There was only two other legislators in the entire state that stood with him and said, that's right, we will vote to impeach this judge. The media just had a heyday. They just reamed him from one end of the town to the other. They ridiculed him in editorials and cartoons, and his name was mud. And his fellow legislators, who, you know, work side by side with him, some who stand with him on certain principles, also criticized him. They started calling him insane and crazy, and it was amazing to me to see how out of touch these people in power are with the true intent of impeachment by the design of our founding fathers.
And I think how out of line they are with the feelings of the average American. The average American feels that sodomy is wrong. They don't believe that we should be having, you know, Adam and Steve of Mary. They think we ought to have Adam and Eve Mary, but not Adam and Steve. They believe in the basic tenets of the Bible, whether they're Christians or not. But you see, you have an elite group who controls the media, who will viciously attack and demonize anybody who has the courage to stand up and tell the truth. And this is why most of those legislators back there in Maryland are afraid to tell the truth, Pastor, because, of course, they don't want to come under the same sort of vicious and scandalous attack. And they will do everything they can to destroy the political career of any politician who has the courage to stand up for God and for family and country. We have really hateful people. They control the media. They control the houses of both of our Congresses. They control the leadership of both political parties. They control the wealth of this world. They are called Olympians. Call them what you will. They are an elite aristocracy who has a plan, a new world order, a Novus Ordo Seclorum, and a new world religion, and with an intense hatred of Christianity. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney as we begin to continue exploring this idea of impeachment. This is the only thing you can do with legislators who violate the law. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Pastor David Whitney. David, go right ahead.
Well, the thing that's so difficult, I think, for most Americans to grasp and to call for impeachment of this sort is that most Americans have a inborn idea that What is enacted by the legislature and signed by the governor or the president and approved by the court system, you know, that must be law. After all, if all these knowledgeable people and so forth have done it, it must be right. And we don't want to oppose the rule of law, so you know, we wouldn't want to call for impeachment of anybody. And yet what we need to understand is when we look at the details of our Constitution, as we're doing in these shows and as we offer in our host kit to folks who will teach others, not themselves teach, but host a lecture, that if you understand what our founders designed our Constitution to be and to function as, the people in power today, by and large, the vast majority of them, are breaking the law. Because the Constitution is the supreme law of the land.
And of course, many of our judges are breaking the law as well, because they are sworn to uphold the Constitution. And when they go to the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, when they go over and look at the Constitution of the European Union to determine what laws should be in America, they have broken the oath that they have sworn to uphold our Constitution. And where is the outcry against them? Everybody's afraid to speak out. After all, we're a nation of law. No, we're not a nation of law. We're a nation of lawbreakers, and some of the greatest lawbreakers are our justices and our judges. What we need to do, of course, is understand what they're doing and then have the courage to speak out against them.
And it is an eye-opening experience for an American to begin to see, wait a minute, those people who we sent down there as legislators, they're not making law, they're breaking law. And not only are they breaking law individually, they're in a conspiracy together. And the sad thing is, our three branches of government that were designed to be a check and balance against one another have kind of conflated into a conspiracy together that they're all going to break the law. And so the judges will cover for the president and the legislators cover for the judge, everybody covering for each other. So we have a band of lawbreakers or a band of brigands or a group of people who conspire together to break the law. What do you call them? Organized crime, a kind of mafia bent on this very object, destroying our constitutional republic, removing our God-given rights from us. And if Americans were to see how personal this becomes, you know, most of us aren't afraid that we'll be in Terry Schiavo's shoes, but we could be. And if we were, one judge can say, your life is not worth living, we're going to kill you. Or, if you were up there...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess. It's Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And before we go on, David, I want you to get out your website. I want you to get out your telephone number so people know how they can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution, which is putting on programs all across America. Now, you're not going to hear about this from Time Magazine or Newsweek Magazine or U.S. News and World Report. The last thing they want you to know is that there is all across America a sudden resurgence in interest and in understanding of our Constitution and the realization that they're being betrayed by the leaders of both political parties who have a different agenda, who have a different worldview. So, David, of course, works with a small group, but it's a growing group of people. They're putting on meetings all across the country, and they do it because they prepared a program so that any person listening in the audience today can begin to teach the Constitution. David, how can they reach you and get the information?
They can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And we have what we call a host kit, because we really tell people you're not teaching the Constitution yourself. You're putting in a series of 12 lectures by Dr. John Eismo, a constitutional law professor who traces the Christian foundation of our nation, the philosophy of government based upon God's Word, and then gives you a working knowledge of the founding documents, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and then also talks about what has happened since our founders established this constitutional republic. What have been the eroding factors that have moved us away from it, and how can we, what's the plan for us to restore the republic? So, as you mentioned, all over the country, 47 states currently, there's at least one class, many states, multiple classes being hosted, where people are graduating and coming away with our founders' understanding of law and government and a working knowledge of the original intent of our founding documents, such that they can open the newspaper and evaluate pieces of legislation that they're hearing about. And they can listen to politicians especially on the stump here in the next couple of months leading up to November, and evaluate whether the programs those politicians are touting really are according to the law of the land, the supreme law of the land being the Constitution. So you, if you take this course, then you are equipped to fully function as a citizen of these United States. And of course, this used to be the function that took place in public education 100 years ago or more, where people studied what the founders said. They read George Washington's farewell address and other such documents that give them a true understanding of what the founders intended. But our public education system has long since abandoned that and now is training socialist minions for the New World Order, citizens of the world, that kind of thing. And so we're doing what used to be done in local context, but we're doing it in a way where everyone can participate. Most people have a sense something's wrong in America. They're not sure exactly what it is. They have a few ideas. But the way to restore our constitutional republic is to train and educate ourselves, our family, our local church. Every local church that believes the Bible should be teaching this, because that's the way they equip their congregation to truly be Christian citizens. That's what we need, Christian citizens who will take action based upon the law of God and the law of the land. So they can call us at that toll-free number of 866-730-9796 and order a host kit. Or they could actually go online at our website and go to our web store, which is at iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. And there's other resources we make available there, as well as articles and information that keeps people updated and helps them host a class, because our goal is that when someone's hosting a class, we want to be a resource to help them answer questions that come up that they don't have the answers to, so that they can successfully train people as what we call constitutionalists. That is, a person who has a working knowledge of the founding documents, a philosophy, a worldview of law and government based upon God's word, and they're actively prepared then to take their place as citizens who will restore our republic. Well, when we talk about the power of impeachment, why this is so important is the legislative branch functioning as a check upon the executive. The executive was designed to have very limited powers, and if the executive violated those powers or expanded itself outside of those powers, the legislative branch was to be an immediate check upon it and say, no, you cannot do this. We will not permit you to do this. We know, however, today the legislative branch is not doing its job, and it allows the president to do umpteen things that are unconstitutional. And one of the most egregious areas of abuse in the executive branch is the use of executive orders. These have become almost law-like in their power. The president issues an executive order, and it's as if a new law has been created. It didn't go through the legislative process. It was just simply signed by the president, fiat legislation. Again, completely in violation of the structure of our government. It is only the legislative branch that is to draft a law, propose it, pass it through, and then the president, or in a state case, a governor, would examine it, determine if it is constitutional, sign it if it is, veto it if it's not, and then the judicial branch would have an opportunity to review that piece of legislation if it came before them in a particular case to determine, is that legislation truly constitutional or not? Well, the whole system's broken down because the legislative branch is allowing the president to function as if he were a legislator. And, again, this is such a violation of the basic principles that you almost have to catch your breath when you see what's being done and you see the design that our founders put together.
Well, you know, the thing that frightens me more than anything right now, David, is the fact that the president and the people who surround him are plotting on how they're going to justify attacking Iran, because that's what they really want to do. The CIA has said, you know, it looks like, you know, it'll be 5 to 10 years before Iran has nuclear weapons, and the, of course, they have to use the excuse that they're just about ready to develop them. Certainly, the Mossad wants us to attack Iran, why, I don't know, because it's going to lead to the destruction of Israel and attack on Israel if we attack Iran. And yet, of course, this is exactly what's going on. So they're providing intelligence that says, oh, no, the CIA really doesn't know anything. Iran could get a nuclear weapon anytime. That's why you've got to attack them right now. And so we're going, of course, the United Nations. All of this is fol-de-rol and window dressing to get the United Nations to pass some sort of a resolution that says, well, Iran really shouldn't have nuclear weapons, despite the fact the neighbors to the east and China have them, the neighbors to the south and Pakistan and India have them, the neighbors to the north in the Soviet Union have nuclear weapons, and Israel has nuclear weapons, but Iran can't even have nuclear power. And they say all we're trying to do is get nuclear power. Anyway, can you speak it just a little louder, David? We're having
sure.
a difficulty.
Okay. What we have going on here really is, again, a violation of the very structure where Congress is supposed to declare war, and the president's function as the commander-in-chief of the Army and the Navy, his function as commander-in-chief sits on the shelf, inactive and unused, unless Congress calls for in a declaration of war for him to begin functioning as the commander-in-chief.
But he's going to go ahead and declare war. He's going to use this in one way or another, because he wants to go to war. The people of America don't want this war, but they want the war. The people who control the president, believe me, George Bush doesn't make any of the decisions. He's simply a figurehead for the power structure who put him in power. And they're intent upon not only going to war with Iran, but with the whole Islamic world, and that's what it's going to be.
And that'll definitely be a world war, and devastating all parts of the globe, which again is part of their globalist agenda. They want to bring the whole world into a conflagration so that they can impose their order, which is, again, a direct violation of everything that our Constitution is about. So we have people in the highest powers in our land, including the president, who are functioning as terrorists against our Constitution and against our constitutional republic. They are specifically designing ways to destroy it. And they could be stopped if we had congressmen and senators with the guts to impeach and to remove them from office. And that would mean, of course, that these congressmen themselves are not committed to the New World Order, instead committed to our constitutional republic. As the election cycle comes up, we ought to think about what sort of questions we need to ask our elected representatives or those who are running for office. And again, I would encourage people to go to our website, iotconline.com. If you go down to the bottom of that first page, you'll find a link to with this statement. Is your elected representative competent? Is your elected representative competent? And that'll take you to a page with a list of, I think it's about 10 questions. 10 questions. If you've taken our course, you will personally be able to answer all 10 of those questions, and you will know when you hear your elected official whether they indeed are competent, that is, they are constitutional or not, in how they answer these specific questions. Now, a basic question is, what is the purpose of government? That would seem like a very important question for someone who's either running for office or running as an incumbent who's already been serving in office. What's the purpose of government? Yet I've asked elected officials that question, and the answer I get is always wrong. They do not answer what our founders said very clearly. Just read the Declaration of Independence, and they state what the purpose of government is: to secure and protect our God-given rights. Nothing else. They're not to redistribute wealth. They're not to see that your seatbelt is fastened or determine how much water you can flush down your toilet. That's not the purpose of government. It is to secure your God-given rights, and of course, the first three and the most important three of those God-given rights are your right to life, your right to liberty, and your right to property. And we were just talking about these briefly before, that Terry Schiavo and all the abortions that take place in our land show that our government is not committed to protecting every human being's right to life in our country. And certainly with the Kelo case and the aftermath of that, most government in our country is not committed to protecting your right to own property. And that should alarm every American. We have thieves and brigands in control of our government. They intend to steal our rights, steal our property, take our life, and certainly take our liberty, as the Patriot Act is a good example of a violation of our right to liberty as citizens of these United States. So if we were just to ask our elected officials those simple questions that are listed on the first page of our website, iotconline.com, if you go there and look Is your elected representative competent? Is your elected representative competent? Print out that list, look at it yourself, and really you need to take our course to know the constitutional original intent answers to each of those questions. But those questions would equip you to go and investigate whether those who are running for office in your particular part of the country truly are following their original intent, or if they are part of the New World Order, part of those who are seeking to destroy our constitutional republic and destroy the frame of government given to us by our founders that was so wise and so with such great foresight that for over 200 years it has functioned well to secure our God-given rights.
But, of course, if it's been 50 years that they have been preventing the American people from really understanding our Constitution, and what they teach in school now is not our Constitution. They actually have these books that compare, you know, our Bill of Rights with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations, and these textbooks point out that the UN Bill of Rights is much better than our, and certainly more rights are guaranteed to people under the UN. Of course, it guarantees you the right to food and all these other things, and but, of course, the whole idea of our Constitution was to limit the power of government so people could be free and look after themselves. It is not the function of the federal government to look after people. That's the function of the local government. And nobody starved to death in America when, of course, we had local control. Now that we have an all-powerful federal government, we fight more wars, more people die in these wars, and of course we kill people throughout the world, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you think you can sit back and simply allow the current policies to continue and not one day have a blowback here in America and see our cities in ashes, as I saw the cities of Europe in ashes after the Second World War, maybe that's why I'm so concerned. I saw what happened to Germany after the Second World War ended. I would hate to see our communities across America nothing but rubble.
And that reminds me that the design of our founders was so wise because not only did they create three branches of government which would function as check and balance against one another, they also created four levels of government. Actually, those four levels were not really their idea. They drew it right out of Exodus chapter 18, verse 21, that talks about four levels of government. But the federal, the state, and then the county and the local, which would be the town or the township, those four levels of government were also to serve as a check and balance, competing interests that would cause there to be no one monopoly of government. And particularly the state was to have wide-ranging powers, and the federal government was to have very limited, restricted powers, and the states were jealously going to guard their powers. Therefore, the states would serve as perhaps the best and most effective power preventing a concentration of power in Washington, D.C. And the story that accurate history tells is how the states were duped and tricked and swindled out of that rightful heritage they had of protecting the rights of their citizens against a federal government and keeping that federal government in check. And as we go on in our study, we'll see how the 17th Amendment and several other things contributed powerfully to the destruction of that design of our founders. But our founders knew that you cannot have a monopoly of government and have the secure rights of the rights of the people secure. If you allow a monopoly of government and you don't have competing governments opposing it, that government will expand its powers and will destroy the rights of the people that are God-given rights. And that's what they faced when King George III began his monopoly of government and prevented them from exercising their rights as Englishmen. That's why in the Declaration and the list of the 28 things, they, in each one of them, said that the king has violated our God-given rights as Englishmen. And that's why we oppose what he has done, and that's why we are separating from him. And so, in a sense, to know the Declaration is to know the situation we are in today.
And, of course, the thing...
monopoly of government as well.
What people don't understand is we have a special ruling class. I mean, we have congressmen who get wonderful pensions. They don't get the same pension as everybody else. They have special pensions. They don't get Social Security unless they get an additional to the very large pensions they get. They get, of course, a complete medical coverage. They don't have to go to HMOs. And, of course, they get preferred treatment. They can go to the military hospitals and get treatment for themselves and their families. And the same thing is true with so many employees. If you are a federal employee, you can't get fired. You get this wonderful, wonderful, job, and you can keep it all the rest of your life. You live very well. You'll get a lot more than comparable people working out there who are paying the taxes, paying the salaries. What we've done is created a new ruling class of Olympians, people who feel that they have the destiny to tell us common people what to do. That was never what the founders of America intended. They intended to take the chains off the people and put them onto government. But once, of course, the elitists figured that the best way to buy the support of the people was to tell that we're going to give you things. Oh, we're here to help. We're going to give you money. We're going to give you benefits. Of course, we're going to draft your sons. We don't necessarily draft them now. We have an all-volunteer army. But one day the draft will have to come. We're going to have more cannon fodder for the coming World War III. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, these things are all happening because the good people in America are just so busy, we just can't be involved. Well, Pastor Whitney, we've got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up your thoughts.
And one of the things that's encouraging is to know that most people, when they think about the Constitution, when they think about our founding documents and what our founders wrote and said, they think, I can't understand that. You got to be a constitutional law professor. You got to be an expert in that stuff. It's just too arcane and too difficult to understand. Well, that's the furthest thing from the truth. Our founders actually wrote our founding documents with the intent that the average citizen would understand them. They wanted citizens who were truly understanding of the details and understanding the philosophy of government, because they recognized that if our constitutional republic was going to preserve, it was going to go on into the future, which they said right there in the preamble, this is made for the blessings of liberty, not only for ourselves and our own generation, but for the succeeding generations as well. Our posterity would enjoy the blessings of liberty as well as ourselves. And so they crafted a document that can be understood by the average person. In fact, our class here in Pasadena, Maryland, we've had homeschool kids that are as young as middle school, like 9, 10, 11, take our course and understand these principles. And actually, I've seen them being tested orally, being asked the questions, and their responses are as good or sometimes even better than the adults. So this is not so arcane and difficult subject for the average person to understand. And so I would encourage your listeners to take up the Constitution and read it. Look to understand its details, but most of all, understand why they wrote what they wrote. And to do that, of course, you need to study the Declaration and understand that they're talking about the Creator God of the Bible is the one who has given us rights. Government's here to secure those rights, and therefore we structured our government in the Constitution to secure the God-given rights of the people against a tyrannical government and against providing for a platform in which government can grow to tyrannical proportions. We have a platform provided in the Constitution that would keep the chains on the government to prevent it from becoming tyrannical. But the only enforcement of the Constitution, there's no police running around enforcing the Constitution. It is we the people. It's we the people who have to enforce the Constitution, first by understanding it ourselves, and then second by holding our elected officials accountable. And you may find that as you ask your potential elected officials questions, pointed questions that reveal what they believe about government, what they believe about our Constitution, you may find that your field of those who you have an option to vote for, none of them are good. None of them have the right answers. None of them have a constitutional understanding of what their job is. And if that's the case, perhaps you need to consider running for office yourself.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Pastor David Whitney. David, let's get your telephone number and your website off one more time.
Yes, our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. 730-9796, and our website, where you can also order our host kit, is iotconline.com. That's all one word, iotconline.com.
God bless you. Thanks so much,
Thank
David.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That's Pastor David Whitney, and of course, This is Dr. Stan, and then I certainly want to remind you, in addition, about the Conspiracy Conference. It's going to be held on the 27th and 28th. That's Memorial Day weekend. Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be at the Hyatt Regency over in Santa Clara. And you can learn more about it by calling 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or go to conspiracycon.com. That's the website, conspiracycon.com. And it's all one word. And then, of course, I'm going to be the lead-off speaker. I'm going to be talking about the financial tsunami that is going to be sweeping across America very soon. And a lot of fascinating speakers. Certainly Will Thomas is going to be there, one of our guests. Ted Gunderson, John DeCamp, Jim Mars. Will Thomas, a lot of excellent people we recommend. And so I think you'll find it a fascinating opportunity to get a lot of information. That's the Conspiracy Conference, Memorial Day weekend, and it's the end of this month, May 27th, May 28th. Again, one more time, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. And if you're going to come, come early in the morning, because I'm the first speaker, and I don't want to be looking out at an empty auditorium. And then, of course, to really understand what's going on, why we have a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom, just talks about the American Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and, of course, what's happening, how there is an organized effort to do away with that and to impose a tyranny on this country similar to the ones that we are backing in countries throughout the world today. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, and an understanding of the forces that have shaped the 20th century is based not upon facts to be learned, but upon secrets to be discovered. Then there really are secrets out there. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the DVD, and or the video, or you can get the book and the tape. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness special. If you have our permission to copy anything we've made, as long as you're not making a profit, you need to get my talk on World Revolution. If you want to understand the history of the wars of the last century, how every single one of them was contrived to bring about world government or to distract us from what was going on here at home as they took away our freedom while we sent our boys overseas, supposedly to fight for freedom, and we lost our freedom here. Why, of course, that's Iraq, the untold story. There's a video, there's a syllabus that goes with that that gives you the documents, including the letter I found in Colonel House's papers from Ambassador Dodd about how we were building up Adolf Hitler's war machines in 1936. After all, we didn't build them up. How could we have a war? And if we weren't working today to do everything we could to inflame the Islamic world against the United States, how could we get them to hate us so, and then manipulate us into hating them? Because you've got to hate the enemy if you're going to have a big war. And, ladies and gentlemen, the war is coming. It's just a matter of not if, but when it's going to occur. And those of you who have heard my talks given since I came back, I talk to people who are in the know, and they tell me that they feel the attack on Iran will be not too far away. And with that, will change the world you and I live in forever. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there directly or indirectly 5 hours a day, 3 hours at Radio Liberty, and then get the attachments to our other websites. You can listen to our shortwave. You can listen to our satellite programs 9 hours a day, and then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival because we're involved in a spiritual battle. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.